The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, October 31st, 2008. It's Halloween, folks, and this is episode number 152, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here this week to bring you the best in MotoGP and motorcycle road racing in general. So, got some good stuff going on today. I got just a little bit too late for last week's show where we were wrapping up about Sepang, the race there in Malaysia. But I got some stuff from Peter Vincent. He's an Australian that traveled to Malaysia and enjoyed the races there. He had a great weekend, it sounds like. And he also did some recording while he was there. So we've got that, and it's great stuff. And then, of course, Jules and I are doing a call where we're going to wrap up the Valencia round, which is the final round of the MotoGP season. We talk about that. We talk about the MotoGP 2008 season, a little bit about World Superbikes coming up at Portimao, the testing that MotoGP did at Valencia right after the race weekend, all kinds of good stuff. Before we get to that, let's see. I want to send a real quick shout-out thank you to Alan Clarkson-Dodds for contributing to MotoGPOD. I do appreciate it, Alan. Thanks a lot. This is the second time, by the way, of contributing, and that's really awesome. Don't necessarily expect people to contribute more than once or anything like that, and it's awesome when they do. I really appreciate it. Helps pay for the bandwidth, helps pay for the beer, helps pay for the show. So thanks a lot, Alan. And let's see, other than that, not a whole lot of sort of front matter that we got going on. So why don't we go ahead and just jump right in to the first little thing that we've got, which is Peter talking to an English guy named Mark. And unfortunately, Peter didn't get Mark's last name. So Mark, whoever you are, if you're listening to this show, thanks very much, because this is a really entertaining little bit as Mark tells us about riding the Ducati two-seater with Randy Mamola at the Donington round this year that he booked through Pole Position Travel. Which is kind of cool, and Mark made a large contribution to Riders for Health and ended up getting a ride on the two-seater with Randy Mamola. So let's listen to that as Mark tells us what that's like.
So we're here at Sepang today. It's Saturday qualifying. I'm here with an English joke named Mark, and he's going to describe his lap with Randy Mamola.
Am I?
Yes, yeah, you do.
Right, what, from the start?
From the start.
Oh, yeah, did the Kina Kamobile thing for the health check, get your bits done, take you through back to the Ducati Hospitality, measure up, or just fit you in the levers, gloves, boots, helmet, the lot, walk you through, bike cracks up on the little wheel at the back, all hell breaks loose because the bike's just absolutely awesome, echoing in a kind of little tiny bit add-on to the pit lane. Randy goes out, warms it up, and then your kind of knees are quaking, and you're getting jelly because you think, shit, I'm going to go on this. So he goes out, does a warm-up lap, comes in, you know, cold rolls in on the front wheel doing a stoppy, drops it down. My first guy gets on, two laps, but you can hear it go, but you don't know how fast it's going to go. You don't know if he's really ripping it, because you can't tell. And then comes in, whatever, one, two, three, then it's me. I'm thinking, shit, man, you know, I've got to do this, because I've paid too much money. I've got to go. So they just lead you out. He comes in, it's just you can't sissy out. You've got to go, even though you're thinking, not sure this is the right thing I should be doing here, but you just get on, hold on. It's got like a real long first gear, so he's really slipping the clutch to kind of get it away, and then just onto the back wheel for just a fairly decent wheelie, drops it down into Redgate first, like I said, first corner, and you think, this is cool, this is nice. But because Randy says, don't bother telling me to slow down because I can't hear you, and don't bother screaming because I won't slow down. So it's it, whatever we do, you've got to hold on. And there's another thing he said, first lap, because we'll go out and we'll take it easy. And then on the second lap, if we can raise it another level, we will. And as I'm coming into Goddard's, which is the last hairpin, first lap, I'm thinking, man, if that was taking it easy, I'm going to fall off because my hands are so pumped and I'm doing everything I can to hold on. And I just can't, I'm just scared I'm going to fall off it because it accelerates so hard and I'm the anchor's so hard. And so your first lap, he just goes off through Craner curves. And he said, you know, you won't believe how fast we changed direction through Craner curves. And I didn't believe how fast you could change direction that quick. Jams the anchors on into the old hairpin, and you're the bike starting kind of backing in, and you're just right up against him. You can't stop. Anyway, it goes through the old hairpin. He's full on the gas, And as he picks it up and flicks left for Starkey's, you can feel the front wheel just shake. So it's obviously lifted the front wheel because he flips it too so quick. And he's just on the air gas again, on the quick shifter, just up through the thick gears, on the anchors again, the thing's backing into like McLean's, pins it into McLean's again, on the gas, up to Coppice, goes through Coppice, and by now I'm kind of up on him. And he said, so I just feel his hand on my knee, he's pushing me back, so he's going for Coppice one-handed right over, and then he gets his hand back on and just cracks it into a wheelie and looks, and I'm like, don't show off, don't look. And then he's going, I say, under the Dunlop Bridge, arse off the seat, you know, you're thinking, we're doing like 160, and I'm not even, you know what I mean, I'm just, my arse is on the seat. On the anchors into the floppy S's, it's just like backing in, three S's, bang, bang again, just up on the quick shifts, hard. All you can do is hold them because it's just relentless acceleration, just bang, bang, bang the gears. Again, crack on the brakes, just backing into the Melbourne hairpin, around again, and then just bang, bang, and that's when I'm coming to God, I was thinking, shit, maybe I should say, I was going to tap him out and go, stop, because if you're going to raise it, I can't hold on. But then he comes and start finish straight, and then it's weird, because you're on the back of it, and you're going to go, I think he's going to wheelie here, and you're going, and then suddenly it goes light, and you're like, shit, we're on the back wheel here, because you're looking up, and you're like, and I'm thinking, that's relaxed, he knows what he's doing, and it just seems to go on forever, and then just drops it down, and then on overrun as well, they sound awesome, unbelievable, yeah, proper. Again, but then as we go through Redgate, again, I know what to expect now. I thought, but as we did the left and down through Craner, I kind of got left behind a bit. So he was over here, and I'm a little bit too right, and I've got to get in. And then I thought, now bollocks, if we're going to hire someone, we're going to go out in style. So I tried to then really, because he said, I can feel from the tension in your arms if you're a good passenger or not, kind of thing, so I can raise it and go faster. So I thought, bollocks, I'm not going to sissy out. So I tried to really kind of, I was trying to move with him, and because I used to ride a bike on the road anyway, and I used to get my knee down and stuff. Yeah. So I thought, shift my ass over a bit so we can go for it a bit. Oh, bollocks, if we're going to go, we'll just go out of a bang. But the second lap wasn't that quicker. It wasn't that much faster. It was just still just relentless acceleration.
Do you think you got used to it by then?
I don't know. I think tyres were warm, they were bedded in, and he just went for it. I think because I was maybe a bit lighter, he probably just thinks, whatever, you know, we'll just go for it. But the second lap was just the same, just relentless acceleration, doesn't stop, and just pulling on your arms, and no matter how much you try and grip, it's not enough. So when you get off, your just hands are shaking. I couldn't undo, they give you water, but I couldn't undo the water, I couldn't speak. My mouth was dry, man. You just need it. And I got off and I just went, I just couldn't speak. I was like,
it's the first bloke we've ever spoken to that's actually
unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So you said there was another couple of girls that went as well.
Yeah,
so
one girl.
Just obviously you had a big jibber session with them after everyone settled down a bit.
Yeah, they were the same. They were just like, one of the girls, she said she felt it sliding. Because one, we come out of thing, I don't know if it was foggy, and the second lap minute just kind of skipped. It wasn't like a proper power slide, but going into the foggy S's, I think he went deep, because it was like, whoa, fucking slowed, and it was just on it, backing in, and I'm like, whoa, and then it was like, put in, and I thought, you overcooked it. And I think afterwards he was talking, and he said, one of the guys, he said, when we went round, he goes, I think we went kind of deep, he goes, I don't know who it was, and I said, I think that might have been me, because he pushes, as he gets used to it, he can go faster, do you know what I mean, because when he goes, that's the first lap of the weekend, on Friday, he doesn't know what the track's like, he doesn't know what it feels like since last year. So he has to go out, and then he gets used to it with us, which I think is a bit disconcerting, because you're thinking, I'd rather you had like a few weekend, you know, not testing and working out the track, the lines, since last year with me. Yeah, it's proper.
Thanks, Mark.
No worries.
All right, I don't know about you, but I thought that was great. I really enjoyed hearing that. The enthusiasm in Mark's voice was readily apparent, and a guy can tell a pretty good story. Sounds like he may have had a few beers to assist that storytelling, but it was pretty funny stuff. Sounds like everybody was having a good time, and thanks a lot, Mark. I did appreciate that one. That was really, really good. Next little bit that we've got is another piece that was sent in by Peter, and this is a chat with Liam. Liam Schubert of Moto Liam fame. You can check out Liam's website at MotoLiam.com. He's been a guest on this show many times, but Peter rounded him up there in Sepang and was chatting with him in the garage, and just a little bit of stuff, the usual kind of thing. It's kind of a different take. It's kind of nice to have somebody else talk to Liam and ask him some different questions than we normally ask him.
The dirt float.
How's it going for you today?
It's been a rough weekend, couple of races.
Since
we podiumed and people got contracts for next year.
Yeah. How are you trying to
don't know yet.
Yeah.
I am really upset about the tire thing that came to pass.
Yeah.
You know, because I came out here for blue sky stuff, and you know, with Bridgestone being the only group that's going to be here, it's
Audi's Bridgestone. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it means that, you know, they say they want to be fair to everybody.
Yeah.
And it means everybody's just going to change their development to make a Bridgestone bike.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when, even up to a couple of years ago, you had all these different engine configurations, different, completely different bikes that were all within this close to one another.
Now
it's, one sec.
How you doing?
Hey, are you sorted for next year?
No, I'm wearing some different things.
So you interested in coming back? You know,
with
now
these guys?
Yeah. I mean, well, with anyone in the paddock.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I like the racing. Oh my God, you're recording.
Oh hell yeah.
I need to start talking about all kinds of dirty stuff now. I want to come back for the right reasons. I want to win races, and I want to be with a group that's capable of doing that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of something that's neutered.
Yeah.
And now I almost feel that Carmelo is neutering a series by going to a one-tire brand.
Yeah.
If you read the press release yesterday, it was all about safety and cost consciousness. So money and safety, but
money is in it, actually. That's
mean, isn't it?
It's bullshit.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to put in words like that because I worked for Bridgestone one day.
I look at the camera.
Yeah, it's a strange time, especially because so many teams are closing out. You're losing Factory KTM, Repsol KTM, Cafe Latte, Polaris World.
Yeah.
I forget who else is leaving 250.
Yeah.
I counted like 14 bikes on the grid for next year for 250, and it's amazing that the top feeder class, with some of the best racing in the world, is going to, you know, get so small.
Yeah,
and have less bikes in the GP grid, which is already too small.
Yeah, that's right.
Meanwhile, I'm looking, you know, I'm taking a hard look at Superbike.
Yeah.
And I never liked that they went to a control tire either.
Mm.
I don't believe that there's a real control tire.
No.
Because there's so many different things you can do to a tire. The same way you can manipulate a dyno any way you want.
Yeah.
If you're smart. You know, for example, say you make 100 tires, the first 5 could be great, the second 50 could be shit, and then the rest could be even worse.
Yes.
Or it depends on what gas mixture you use inside of them, or the pressure you run. Right? There's just so many different ways where little things can be changed, and you know, it's nothing's ever really a level playing field. But Superbike does seem interesting. At least BMW is coming, and Brody's going to be there, and KTM needs to figure out how to make that bike work. Just, I sat on it, and you know, ergonomically, the bike seems awesome.
Yeah,
their RC8. I enjoy the styling of it. But yeah, if it's roasting people as badly as it is and it's not working, then time to hit the books again. As for going to a smaller category, like 250 or 125, I've got some options with that too.
Okay.
I'd like to get into mentoring kids at some point, just because I'm an experienced person with a lot of analytical capability now.
Yeah.
More so than I thought.
Yeah. I think that's what you get with age. Because I was talking, we were staying in a place up the road here, and I was talking to a young fellow who's come over to watch the race, and he races in Australia. Because I raced years ago.
We sat down there, we chatted for hours about, I'm asking how he's going about, you know, working the suspension and what he's doing to the bike and what he does in his race days, and I think he's all over the place where he's saying, well, look, you know, you've got to settle down. You need somebody who's had experience to work with you through the bike and don't get all panicky or whatever else like this, or just do one thing at a time, and it's a process.
And you work, you know, hopefully you get a chance to work with professional people.
Yeah.
I hate, if there's one thing I hate, it's yelling or shouting in the garage.
Yeah.
It just puts everybody on edge.
Yeah.
And that's the last kind of thing you need.
Yeah. A bit of that goes in some of the teams here?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, when it's hot and, you know, fast and loose, it's not quite as good as it could be.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at how Jerry works with Rossi and, you know, even how quiet the garage is on Pedrosa's side, Nicky's side. It's really calm.
Like,
even when you're facing some kind of problem, it's still pretty calm.
Obviously, you'd be keeping a bit of an eye on use, focus on what's going in your garage, because next door, yesterday, we're looking at the big screens and we didn't see some happy faces there. They look like they fucked up their second qualifier.
Yeah, a bunch of people did, us included.
Oh.
Nakano included.
Yeah.
It just seemed like there was time, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's difficult to judge because when you've got a 2-minute lap, you want to estimate, okay, you're going to need 6 minutes for each tire because two out, two to the hot lap, and two to come back in. Then there's the factor of how long it's going to take to swap the wheel.
Yeah.
But then there's always a little bit of, you know, uncertainty with them when it gets to the critical second. Because what if you get caught up behind a lapper, you know, and you're like, you lose a couple of corners, or your rider decides, oh, I'm going to get a fast lap. I'm going to take a tow from somebody I know is running good this weekend, and they screw it up.
Yeah.
There's a couple different factors that go into timing that right.
Yeah.
And for my money, everybody kind of screwed up.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't happy with that at all, but that's the way that
it was a weird session yesterday because of course the rain. We're on the other side of the track. We managed to break into a corporate box over there, so we had all the screens. It was excellent. Good air conditioning. It's been an electrician. I've got the air conditioning going. It's all good. And of course we had the monitors, and that was, you know, had some great information as the sessions going on. But because it was wet, and then as it's drying out and the people coming in for their slicks, and then that last 5 minutes is just. Was
a bit of a flurry. I never really think too much about weather conditional changes because it's the same for everybody.
Yes.
I think if we were just trying radical stuff and making big changes to the bike during the session, then obviously we're not working in the right way.
Yep.
But when everybody's forced to do that, then it's just part of the game.
Yep.
And, you know, we've got spare shocks. We've got, you know, the wheels are ready to go.
Yep. Yeah, so it's just part, like you say, it's part of the, you know,
it's part of the process. And I don't know. I think after you do this for a little bit, you start to, you don't even visualize those kind of details anymore.
Yeah.
It's just automatic.
Yep.
And you start seeing bigger picture stuff, like say an engine failure on Friday.
Yeah.
It's going to affect your guy over the whole weekend because now he's no longer got confidence in the machine.
Yeah.
And even though the machine's working the same or better than it was on Friday, you know, the real deal is psychological there.
Yes. Now, tell me this morning, because I haven't been to a race for a while, but, and usually because I don't get the MotoGP.com feed.
Okay.
So don't see the strategy in the morning. Well, it's just been really bizarre. They've gone out, they've done a couple of laps, and they've all seemed to grid it up with their positions and done a practice start.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like it was a bloody match race going on. Is that usual?
Yeah, typical. We usually send the guys out on a fresh engine. We'll change on Saturday night.
Yep.
And we want to put some miles on it before the race.
Yes.
Just to make sure everything's working right and get some data, and we check all our sensors and make sure everything's working. We also want to test our start.
Yep.
And it's also good for the show.
Yeah.
Everybody gets to see like a nice, you know, full tilt grip.
Yeah.
And
yeah, look good. Yeah.
It points out like deficiency. Like if the rider goes out too slow on the opening lap to get to that point, and the clutch is too cold when he takes the start, it might be gravier. It might not work the same way as it is where it's been sitting on the grid for 15 minutes, like on the typical race. I mean, there's weird things that come into play that you wouldn't really expect out of the machine.
Yeah.
But you know, this is why we collect data.
Yep.
At the end of the day, it's still prototype racing until Valencia.
Well, that chat ended a little abruptly, and I asked Peter about that, if I had missed something, if, you know, some of the file, I don't know, didn't come through, got corrupted, something like that, but that was how it was. Basically, Liam had to get back to work. As you could hear in the background there on that call, they were in the garage. You could hear the guys with the air compressors and all that thing. Liam is a busy, busy guy on these race weekends, and you're sort of lucky to grab a few minutes with him to chit-chat and maybe have a quick break and talk a little bit about the stuff. So thanks a lot to Liam and to Peter for recording that. It was interesting stuff and a race weekend at a country realistically where I'll probably never get a chance to go down there in Malaysia at Sepang. So it's kind of fun to be able to have some live on the scene sort of recording and everything. So thanks a lot, Peter. Do really, really appreciate it. And of course, always thanks to Liam. Always enjoy having you on the show. And big thanks to Mark for his retelling of the Ducati two-seater experience. That was awesome stuff. So now why don't we go ahead and get on with the call with Jules Nye, and let's have a listen to that. Hey, Jules, how you doing today?
I'm doing right. How's it going?
Doing good, doing good. Having an excellent week here. A lot of entertainment at work, but I'm not going to bore on about that on the show, but we've had all kinds of internet problems. But whatever, we did have some, exciting racing there at Valencia,
And we've got World Super Dupers coming up here, their final round at Portimao, new track for them, and some other stuff. And so we've got a few things going on right before we hit our long winter's break. So, you know, why don't we sort of cover some of that?
Sure.
Right on.
So, we had the race at Valencia, which in MotoGP, which pretty much, I didn't think that we could get more boring than Sepang, but well.
Wow. Actually, I think it was probably more interesting than Sepang, but it was borderline. Farther down the order, fourth was the
tenth,
race?
I think the 5 for 10th was amazing.
The 5 for 10th was, yes, fantastic. But no, I mean, even, even a little farther down, it was some good racing. But yeah, up front, what a snoozer. And it's a little bit of a shame to end the season that way. I think actually the more interesting news that has come out, not to get ahead of ourselves, because I do want to talk a little bit about the race, but the more interesting news was some of the stuff that came out in testing.
Yeah. Let's talk about that later. I've got lots of notes we should discuss about this race and tires and testing.
Those crazy tires, darn them. So in any case, Valencia, last round of the season. Rossi has locked up the championship. There was still possibilities of for fourth.
Fourth place could have happened with Dovi. If Dovi had won the race and Lorenzo, I think, finished like 12th or something.
It was a little ridiculous, actually. Yeah, but actually with Lorenzo, it's not all that ridiculous because he might have crashed.
He could have crashed, exactly.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a lame duck race, but still, Valencia is one of those circuits because of the heightened Spanish craziness and everything. You know, you count on a good show, you know? And, I think at this race, what was our starting grid? There was Stoner Pedrosa Hayden on the front row. Hayden got a terrible start. I think if Hayden had gotten a better start, that we might have had, at least for the first half, a little bit better of a race.
Actually, I'm trying to remember what the start looked like. I thought he had a really good start.
Nah, he dropped a fourth at the end of the first lap.
I'm not talking about the actual moment of the start. Like, he was off the line.
Maybe I should watch it again, but I was like, okay. The start kind of like, you know, I watched the start and that defines the entire race for me. And it was a little bit of a deflation, you know, I was like, oh.
So speaking of Nicky, before we get too far ahead, you know, he was wearing that, he changed his sticker since where it says N Hayden.
Yes.
It says N Hypocrite.
Yes, but then he changed it.
Which
back.
N means not a hypocrite, and because that's what he's been saying. But then the team or somebody, quote unquote, asked him to remove it, and he did. He was just like, it was a joke, and obviously he rubbed somebody the wrong way. I don't care. He's just like whatever.
Yeah. It's not important enough to cause any kind of fuss over or anything like that. They had the Repsol bikes, and a friend of mine was watching the race actually before I was, because I kind of was watching on speed, but I let the DVR sort of catch up for commercials, so I had to start watching it. And they're like, "What's up with Nicky's colors?" And they were running a special livery, which must have been a kind of a Repsol promo tie-in. Yeah,
Repsol 69 or something like that colors. Right.
It was actually, I really liked it.
So I think that they, because they also ran the same livery on the Repsol 125 and 250s.
Yeah.
And I actually saw those races before the Valencia one, so I was already used to it, and it was already starting to wear thin on me. But like the first time I saw it, I was like, "Oh, that's so cool!" I think it's the type of thing where like if it's a one-off, it works. But if they were running those kinds of colors for a long time, you would get tired of just the white thing, fast. You know?
Well, I think the Repsol bike is one of the best looking bikes out there. Anyway, the orange, red, white, and super dark blue, almost black. I think it's striking. It's noticeable. It's, you know, I like it. I like those colors a lot. So, it's interesting as a one-off and all of that. But it's a little bit like when Rossi was running the soccer team colors.
Yeah.
You know, vaguely interesting, but I'm glad they don't do that every race.
Yeah. It's pretty hideous.
Yeah, exactly. And, and it was very, very white, very stark. Mm-hmm. Both Pedrosa and Hayden, white leathers and all that. And Nicky had his like 9 great years or whatever on his ass that we got to see on ass cam all the time. But
right.
Yeah.
And then Lorenzo had Lorenzo Land livery, which is kind of cool too.
Yeah, that one plus and minus. I thought it was a little too. There was a lot of flags going on, dude.
Yeah.
And which, granted, it's because those are the races where Lorenzo has – was where he had won or where he had participated in a GP of some kind. Whatever it was. I mean, like Brazil was on there, and we haven't raced in Brazil in a couple of years and all of that. So, I don't know. I just thought it was a little blingy.
Yeah, but it looked kind of cool, I thought.
It's different. It's different. It's kind of fun. So in any case, I'm going to go watch that start again. From what I recall watching it, I didn't think that Nicky got that great a start. I might be wrong. But by the end of the first lap, Hayden was in fourth behind Stoner, Pedrosa, and Edwards. And pretty much it boils down to that Stoner had a little bit of a problem with Pedrosa, but it was very, very, very brief, and then he just checked out.
And Pedrosa checked out from the rest?
Right. And, so by the end of the race, is Stoner, Pedrosa, big gap. And
Rossi cut through the field pretty fast. He was, he was starting. He had a terrible starting position, but...
Yeah, and I'm not 100% sure why, because I didn't follow the qualifying. I wasn't watching it and all of that. I know it was wet during the practice sessions, but the qualifying session itself was kind of half and half or a mix.
Those worries and stuff. So
yeah,
it was timing issues, I think. Not timing as in, just
scoring
they were
timing,
out there
right.
at the wrong time with the wrong tires.
Right. Well, it's a fairly lengthy lap at Valencia. So they can, that can affect things of what they're doing. Let's see what a kind of lap times that you're looking at. A 1.5, 1:31, 1:27, whether that kind of range. But still, you can... easily screw stuff up. Oh boy, we're just winging this one, aren't we, Jules?
But oh, yeah, let's just okay. I mean, so we had this race, I think that I was happy to see Edwards do well.
Yeah,
relatively well.
Relatively well, especially there was the whole thing with Edwards and apparently. Now, was it his crew chief or his tire guy or who
was it? It's his crew chief that left.
It was his crew chief. Okay.
His crew chief that left to go to the Wonder Boys side of the garage.
Right. And that's, Wonder Boy. Wow. Because I thought Edwards and Toadsland, got along. I mean, Edwards is such a friendly guy. You can't really imagine him not getting along with almost anybody, right?
Well, he said it in a way that's, I don't know, he was kind of laughing about it, so...
Still,
I don't know.
Sounded a little bitter.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think he has a right to be bitter that his crew chief bails to go to the other side of the garage, basically.
But he did say he'll destroy them both.
Yes, I will destroy you. there's been quite a few good posts on Ride On 2, and this is a little bit of an inside joke between Jules and myself and
I will
all of
destroy
that.
Him.
Yes.
it's actually from Barton Fink, Coen Brothers film.
Which I had forgotten about that movie, and that was a bizarre movie, and I saw that stuff. Yeah. Okay, we digress.
Definitely when we start talking about Coen Brothers in the middle of a Valencia review, you know it was a pretty shitty race.
Yeah, realistically, it just, hey, everybody finished, though, which is cool.
That's true. Melandri was doing actually really well. He was in the top
really
10, but he had a gearbox problem.
That's a bummer. He was way up. I mean, for Melandri this year, he was like, wow.
Yeah. He's always done good at this track, though.
Yeah.
Always. And,
he was doing quite well, And then, yeah, he missed a gear or did something or other. Something. Yeah, he explained it. I heard his interview about it. But,
right. Yeah. You know, I mean, there was a gearbox issue.
Yes.
What that means.
Some kind of gearbox issue, like right. A false neutral. Right. But in any case, so yeah, that was a little bummer because that was like two laps before the end of the race. But other than that, basically the finishing order was Stoner, Pedrosa, Rossi, which I had called on my ride on two picks.
To win?
I called Stoner to win, yes, okay. After the thing. And I'm trying to remember who I put. I think I put Rossi to place, so I got the points for that. I had a DNF,
sweet, nice.
Which I didn't. Nobody DNF'd, so I lost the points on that.
Right,
but yeah, I ended up finishing. I think it was 16th overall, 15th overall.
You jumped up quite a bit in the last couple of rounds.
Yeah, yeah, but still not catching you. You're way ahead of me. So
yes, I was very pleased because. I look back through the results. There were only like four or five races where I didn't score any points. So pretty cool.
So next year I will pay more attention because I it's not that I didn't. I'm not going to use like that as an excuse or something like that. But I was there were a couple of races where I just sort of slammed in some picks without a lot of thought. And like this one, I went back and changed them, you know, on Friday when, oh, wow, things are different than I thought they would be.
Right.
Because
so you beat Jim Race, right?
What's that again?
You beat Jim.
Yes, I did. I always smoked Jim.
So, that's all that matters.
Yeah, okay, good.
You have to beat Jim.
Yeah.
After the race, a couple of things that very interesting things that were noted. Were, first of all, Rossi has the highest points ever record, 373 points for the season.
And that is now the record, is it?
Yep, that is the record. Here's an interesting statistic that is amazing. Yamaha was on the podium. Guess how many races out of the 18?
On the podium?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, Rossi alone accounted for so many of those. 15.
18.
18. Every they were on the podium race. Every time, huh?
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Yeah. Wow.
It was like in the beginning, it was like Lorenzo when
Rossi was having his issues. Lorenzo, okay.
And then in Assen, it was Edwards.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That was the one race. That was the race that Rossi had a lot of trouble with. So unbelievable.
Good that stuff is unbelievable. For Yamaha. That's and awesome stuff.
I know, and in fact, after the Valencia round, Tech 3 just nudged out Rizu Suzuki, a factory team, in the team championship. So the final standings for the team championship was Fiat, with then Repsol Honda, then Ducati. Obviously, Ducati suffered because there was really only one rider scoring
points.
Only
one guy, yeah, exactly.
And then Tech 3, by 1 point over Rizu Suzuki, then Grissini, then Team Scott, with actually just one rider, beating Alice Kawasaki, and of course last was LCR.
Wow. Now the sad news about that one is Kawasaki.
Yeah.
Being so far down as far as the team standings. I mean, they this is a factory team. They should have with one solid good rider and one. He's a decent writer. They should
actually. I would say that those guys were pretty, close to even in terms of points.
In the end, but I think a lot of that is because Hopkins' injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. But still, if you crash, you crash. It's the same thing that happened to Lorenzo.
Yeah, that's too. True. That's true. I think that they've got a with Melandri and stuff that they're going to have an interesting year next year.
Well, when we get to talk about testing, in fact, why don't we just jump into that?
Because we're pretty much done with the race. Folks, if you haven't seen the race out there, you didn't miss a whole lot other than the fact that it is a MotoGP race and you should watch it just simply out of duty. And it was good farther down.
There's some cool fireworks at the end.
Yes, there were some very cool fireworks. And actually, farther down the order, it was the battle for 4th or 5th or...
No. No, it was literally...
Was it farther?
It was like by half distance, I think the battle was for like 9th, 10th.
Was it that low?
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, 2 seconds between this rider and 4 seconds between the next rider and two to the next rider. Seriously.
I'm looking at the classification. Let me look at the lap chart. I watched the race, and they were actually showing this, and they're showing five guys, you know, jostling for position. And, I mean, it was good racing, but it was way down the order.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, yeah.
Even the 250 race was kind of decided early.
Yeah? I haven't even watched the 250 race. I've got that in the saved bank for, you know, like December when I start jonesing for motorcycle racing.
Right.
Along with a bunch of 125 races and stuff like that. Because we finished the race, Stoner, Pedrosa, Rossi, Dovizioso, Hayden, Edwards, 56. Refresh my memory.
Nakano.
Nakano. That's why I didn't recognize him, although he is finishing where he always finishes. And Lorenzo, Caparossi, D'Angelis, Toseland, Gattoli, blah, blah, blah. So whatever. Real quick. Sete Germanage running number 59 next year. Do you see that?
Yes.
Yes, which it's kind of funny because, you know, his normal number is 15. But
right, which Dean took.
It's checked out. He couldn't get his 15 number. So he took 59, which Canepa's his number. So Canepa's screwed and had to go with 88.
little musical chairs in the numbers game there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, poor old Canepa's like, yeah, I wanted my normal number, but said they took it. Bastard. And real quick, while we get in, as we get into the Valencia testing, it kind of ties in and stuff. The Pramac team next year with Canepa and Callio, I think that they've got the strongest lineup they've had in a very long time.
Yes, although I'm going to go on the early limb and say that I'm not expecting much from Callio.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering about that a little bit, but why? What's your take on that? Why do you say that?
It's completely a gut feel based on the way he does like interviews and stuff. He just doesn't seem like he has a lot of spirit, and he doesn't seem like he has a lot of he's just spirit and enthusiasm, and which I think is required to take on a role in the MotoGP team.
Especially Premec and Ducati and all that.
Yeah, yeah, where you actually have to really, you know, it's not just about riding around the track. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of his, and so that probably just...
That's a good take. I appreciate it. I mean, his results in the 250s have been a bit up and down.
He's a good rider. He doesn't strike me like the kind of passion that, you know, Simoncelli or even the crazy Barbara.
Right, but, you know, or Nicky Pacini Hayden or any of those guys.
Nicky Hayden, you know, even you could even say that Pedrosa has seems to have more enthusiasm. You know,
wow.
That's on the harsh. Track, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it remains to be seen how he does. But on the other hand, Canepa, as the test rider for Ducati, did some wonderful stuff last year this year, whatever you want to call it, 2008. And I think that he's going to bring something to the table for the satellite Ducati team for Pramac that it's just going to be really interesting.
Yeah. The one interview that I watched with him, and it was, in Italian because I don't think he speaks English. I also was Italian. I just listened to his, he just seems like a much more animated character. He's a typical Italian, very excited, you know.
Oh, he's definitely more animated than Callio. I mean, Callio's a Finn. They're you know, typically reserved. I mean, come on, look at him. I mean, when's the last time you had a Finn that was like loads of fun on the podium?
That's true. Look at Mika Hakkinen was not too bad.
Mm.
He had a couple non-robotic moments, I remember.
Right. But, I mean, you know, currently you got, you know, I mean, in Formula One, we have Kimi Räikkönen is the Iceman. They call him the Iceman. But on the other hand, he's quite the boozer, which is fun.
Okay.
We digress yet again. MotoGPOD, you know, nothing like a little digression. So let's talk about testing. Did you see that story? Superbike Planet ran it, of course, and I can't remember who wrote it. And of course, let me look. They were talking about Nikki leaving the garage at Valencia, and how it was almost like, you know, it was a sad moment, and his lower lip was trembling, and this and that. You know the one I'm talking about?
No, I didn't read that one. Pretty much was sticking to the facts. There was so much information.
Yeah.
So I skipped anything that got a little too gushy.
Oh, wow, gushy. It was on Monday, which, you know, there was all the stuff. Last Moment in Garage 16 is the name of the story. And it's by Jim McDermott. And I thought it was touching. And it was actually kind of cool. He's talking about, you know, that he's standing outside the Honda garage on the last race and this and that. And a few Honda execs come out and they go out and, you know, they're standing around smoking and sort of shuffling their feet and doing the sort of, you know, Honda exec thing. And that when Hayden came out, you know, he signed a few autographs and stuff, but you could see that it was an emotional moment for him.
Of course,
9 years. I mean, a long time. Nicky Hayden's been a Honda guy, and it had to be a bit of a moving.
This team, I mean, he's had some of these mechanics with him the whole time since 2003. So
right, exactly, and even back in his AMA days, he was a Honda guy. So this is you know, it had to be a bit of a painful sort of, you know, see ya.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying before he's expecting it to be very bittersweet because he's so excited about getting on a Ducati, but at the same time, you know, leaving Honda after all this time is obviously going to be painful.
Right. So yeah, on that one, check out Superbike Planet for that story.
I have to say that I'm reading Superbike Planet less and less lately because even though they have great stories and great photos and stuff, I read using an RSS feed and they don't have any. They just show the titles, and very often the title is very misleading. You click on it, and it's just like a list of the times for that. So, like, I thought that particular one was like going to be the test times for the first day of Nikki on the Ducati, because that's the kind of thing that they would do. They kind of suck you in. So I've been just, you know, when there's tons of news, I tend to skip over the soup stuff, which is kind of a shame because they have the most colorful ways of writing.
It's where news writers go to know that they've been sacked.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But there's worse websites out there. And
of course,
Yeah. So, and also, for all I know, this is a bit of my ignorance. Jim McDermott might be writing for I don't know how many websites, but I happened to see it on Superbike Planet. So that was the one I saw. And I will put a link in the show notes to that if you want to see, you know, Nikki's emotional departure from the Honda garage and all of that. But moving on to the testing at Valencia on Monday, which was some interesting stuff in a lot of ways.
There was a very interesting thread that somebody started on Round 2, which has a little poll, you know, which Ducati rookie is going to do best. And obviously we have four of them because we've got Nikki and Mika and Nicola Canepa. And then, of course, we've got Melandri as well. So that's four new riders going to Ducati and, you know, who's going to do the best. And as I was reading through that thread, there was I read an article that was quoting Wayne Gardner saying that he thinks Nicky might actually have a really tough time with the Ducati because even though they come from the same kind of background, him and Stoner, Nicky's been on a non-electronic controlled bike for 3 more years than Stoner. And that Stoner had a lot less to unlearn. And then I was remembering just like during qualifying when Nikki was qualifying at Valencia, he was sliding through that last corner. He was backing it in like crazy in Valencia. And I was thinking to myself, wow, you know, maybe Gardner is onto something, because that kind of riding style is going to be impossible for him to do on this Ducati, which really seems to rely on the electronics. So you know, Nicky proved me wrong, because Nicky ended up being the best of the rookies.
Best of the rookies, but still,
yeah, he was way only like off a second pace. Off.
Yeah, I think
for first time out, that's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, everybody knows that listen to this show that I am a big Nicky Hayden fan. And I like the guy a lot, and I want to see him win. But I think that what's going to end up happening is that he's going to go out there and he's going to finish second to Stoner all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, it'll be a bummer to see, but that's what I think will happen. I think that Stoner has, through a combination of natural talent, and the guy has gobs of it, and I'm not talking a damn Stoner sliming session or anything like that, but the guy has a lot of natural talent. But through a combination of natural talent and just sort of matching with that motorcycle and this and that, that he's doing things with that motorcycle that nobody else can do.
I think if you put
Rossi on that motorcycle, he'd have a big run for his money.
Who? Stoner?
Both of them. No, that Rossi would have a run for his money compared to Stoner. And that, you know, that Rossi makes it look easy on the Yamaha. And, I mean, the other riders, you know, Edwards, Toseland, you know, yeah, you know, sure, they do okay and all that. But they don't start 10th on the grid and work their way up. You know what I'm saying? Rossi makes it look easy. So I think that if Rossi was on the Ducati, he would still have a run for his money big time to be able to do that to Stoner on the same bike. Just because it's this sort of... Like I said it before, and I got criticized, and this and that, perfect storm, or whatever it is, that in a combination of natural talent, a combination of this just sort of that Stoner understands the motorcycle, whatever it is, Stoner on the Ducati is a fairly unstoppable combination.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that Rossi surprised me by how well he was able to adapt to the change in technology. I really kind of wrote off last season, not just to his problems with tires or anything. I mean, he was really racing. And I think that I was thinking that, you know, maybe the problem that Rossi is having is simply that he just doesn't like – he just has had too many years on bikes where you actually control the throttle and every little mistake you make is actually going to cost you in the race, whereas Stoner, you know, whacks that thing open. I'm actually surprised, and I think that Rossi did a really good job adapting to the new M1, and I think that he would do the same thing on the Ducati. Maybe the Ducati is built for Stoner, but remember, Rossi is a really good development rider, and assuming that he would bring over his crew with the incredible Burgess, I think they would be able to turn that into that'd be awesome. We'll never see it, but I think it'd be really awesome. A lot of people are still dreaming of the possibility of Rossi switching bikes again and going to Ducati. But considering what he said about Ducati in the past, I just don't see it happening.
I don't see it happening. I agree. It would be awesome to see because of so many things.
Imagine winning a championship of three brands of bikes, for example. That would be pretty tasty.
Three brands and what, three different formulas as well, and all of that. Yeah, it would be neat. But that's kind of what I'm getting at, though, is that yeah, sure, you know, Rossi might be able to adapt and this and that and the other, but you know, Rossi is this way exception to the rule. The guy is supernatural, and I'm saying that Stoner would definitely. Would give him a run for his money.
Would give Rossi a run for his money.
Right. Give Rossi a run for his money. Okay. Sure. And as much as I like Nicky Hayden and all of that sort of thing, he's not Rossi.
No. No, and I don't think he's going to be beating Stoner regularly. Like you. I agree with you on that. I think that he's going to do better than he's been doing on the Honda.
Well... he'll certainly be doing better than Melandri did on the Ducati. How's that?
Okay, definitely that.
Yes, and I think he'll be doing equal to what he's been doing on the Honda. Meaning sometimes Pedrosa beats Hayden, sometimes Hayden beats Pedrosa, etc.
Well,
et
hang on a second. So you mean relative to other Honda riders or just better results than what he had on the Honda? See, I'm saying he's going to have better results. I think he's going to finish better in the championship next year.
I think so, too. Where did he end up finishing? Now, Bob is so totally prepared. in the championship for the World Championship, Hayden finished sixth. I think, he'll probably pick up a spot or three on that. But will he be ahead of Pedrosa or behind Pedrosa? Yeah, I don't know.
You have to also remember the fact that I'm kind of being my own devil's advocate here because there are so many talented riders in the championship this year and next year, too. It's gonna be tough.
Yes, it is.
Vizioso on the Repsol Honda. Lorenzo is probably not gonna miss as many rounds as he did this year. That's gonna make him very formidable.
Right. Is Stoner's surgery gonna work out? I mean, they're chopping out part of his hip to put into his wrist.
Right. That's right.
And all of that. And granted, Stoner had a spectacular race at Valencia. But he's riding through a problem and he's got surgery coming up and this and that and the other, yada, yada, yada. You know, maybe he won't do that well next year because his wrist will be all screwed up. I don't know. But this is just my hunch that, all I was getting down to was that Hayden will be behind Stoner in the championship standings next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see, I'd like to see Hayden pick up another championship. I'd love to see him out there in the Ducati Red and all of that and go out there and just smoke and win. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, there's so much talent out there.
There is. That is a big part of the problem. And like you've said.
It's not a problem, but it's, yeah.
Well, the issue, whatever it is. Like you said, though, that, if you want close racing and all of that, you got to get rid of Rossi.
Yeah,
and probably get rid of Stoner.
Stoner and Pedrosa because they like to race alone, right? They like to run away with races, and
which I think Valencia was a classic example of.
Yeah, and same thing with Sepang. If it wasn't for Rossi, Pedrosa would have been just so gone. So testing was actually very interesting. I thought that Dovi didn't do so hot on the on his first day, but was very happy. What I liked about the first ride that Hayden did on the Ducati was just some of the things he said. He was like, they're not paying Stoner enough.
Yes,
it's just an animal. It's a beast. I love it.
But these are classic Hayden comments, though. Too.
I know. Yeah. And then he talks about the fact that he doesn't want to make any changes to the bike because hey, if Stoner can do it, I can do it. Right. I just like his approach,
Yes, his. He didn't go out there and he said, take two laps and say, okay, we need new clip-ons, we need new footrest, everything's right. Got to be different. It's like, no, he specifically said those things. I'm not making that up. That, he went out there and, it's like, I got to figure out where this bike is. He's on a new bike, new tires, all sorts of things. And he did really well in the testings. And I do want him to do well. The testing was good. There was his livery was fairly blingy at the testing of the American flag thing going on.
Yeah, it's cool.
I liked the black Honda livery. I think the raw carbon fiber with just a few stickers on it. I think that looks cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what's his name? Gibbernau's Ducati looks sweet.
Yes,
the black and gold.
Yes,
yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And that's going to be – he's going to be a spoiler, Gibbernau.
Oh, it's going to be so cool. I don't – he's not going to be – it's not going to be 2004, 2003, anything like that. But it's just going to be fun. I just want to see the interactions between him and Rossi.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 2009 is going to be the best season ever, Julie.
Actually, let's hope, because this season was had some great moments, but it also just started uncovering a dark side.
Yes, I agree. I think they managed to pull out, considering that the switch to the 800s and all of that, this season was about as good as you can expect it to be.
Yeah.
As, you know, the first half was a bit of a toss-up of like, oh, wow, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then after Laguna Seca, you know, Rossi started dominating. And we had made predictions. I had made predictions back at the beginning of the season that we would go all the way on up to Malaysia before we decided the champion. We didn't see that. But there was, you know, Lorenzo's injuries, Stoner's injuries, and all of that. Stoner's
crashes is what really did it, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The mid-season section for Stoner was, in 2008, was a disaster. And if he can avoid that in 2009, then, you know, it'll be a different season. And, yeah, we're going to the one manufacturer tire rule, which we'll just, you know, we'll just get over it.
Well, before we get over, can I just tell you what I read very interesting comments from Mamola about it. He said, after the race, I was talking to Michelin's Jean-Philippe Weber, and I told him how much I respected Michelin for being true to the sport and wanting competition, and as a result, not tendering for the single tire rule. So my personal feeling is that just as fast as single tire rule came in, we will have to see how fast it comes out again. A lot will depend on the results next year.
Right.
I thought it was a very interesting comment.
That is a good comment. And it is good that at least the rule is in for, 3 years? Which,
right.
You know, depending upon your age, 3 years is a very, very long time or not that big a deal. Right. But I hope that we see this go away.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things have already, like, I'm just like, oh, my God, this sucks. Because, there was an article in Motorcycle News that Bridgestone is going to reduce the level of grip in their tires.
Yeah, what's up with that? What are they going to do, make it slippery?
It's bizarre. It's totally bizarre.
Yeah, and that's a classic. That's the stuff that we've been bitching about the whole time, that this is not the class of racing where you do this kind of thing.
So, there is one thing that I really like about the single tire rule I realized, which is that there's going to be no qualifying tires.
You like that?
I love it. I think it totally makes absolutely zero sense to have a special tire to decide who has the pace. I mean, the reason why you have qualifying is so you don't have a guy who's going to be slow during the race holding everybody up and causing danger or whatever, right?
That makes things fun.
Well,
I see what you're saying.
In a very random way. Right, yeah. Because Michelin has had really good qualifiers in the beginning of the year. These guys got to start up front and just fell backwards, which made, I guess, allowed artificially more passing. I don't like things that artificially cause racing. I want the racing to be real, right?
Yes.
And I like the idea that there's not going to be any qualifiers. You're going to be qualifying on race rubber, and because Bridgestone is actually just giving you X tires and there's just too few tires to allow for qualifiers, it's not going to be like in F1 where it's like they had to make the actual tire that you're using is the same tire you used during the race, something like that, right? Like when you start the race. I don't even know what the rule is like anymore.
I don't know. Something along those lines. I know they have to use both tires and all this kind of silliness and stuff, and I hope I don't see that. Yeah.
So that is kind of interesting. But then, when you go down this whole – Rossi said some really funny things at the end of the season. He basically was saying like, a lot of the things I'm going to say from now on, I was ready to say last year, but I didn't want to say it because I didn't win the championship and I didn't want to sound like a big whiner. But now that I've won the championship, I want to be able to say that, here's some of the things that I've kind of made a list of, he said, in the last couple of weeks. He said, it has been 2 years now since there has been a last lap overtaking for the lead in MotoGP.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was thinking about it, and it's true. Laguna Seca may have gone down to that point if Stoner hadn't crashed.
Had Stoner not gone off track, yeah.
But that's the only race I can think of where that would have been possible. In all the other races, they were decided way before that. And like in the races where Stoner fell, like in Misano, for example, and Brno, I think that either he would have gone away or Rossi would have passed him before, long before the end, and then been gone himself.
Yeah, so, I agree. It was those were done deals one way or the other, and yeah, in Stoner, yeah, yeah. Huh.
So that's one thing he said. And he said, you know, he doesn't think that so he says that electronic aids make the bikes boring. And yeah. And I'm quoting him, I don't think that single tire rule is the solution for this problem. I repeat, the electronics are very sophisticated. The technical evolution is incredible. And next year will be even worse. However, there have been some good races this year, so the track counts for a lot. And he says a track like Valencia are just not good for the show. Somebody else mentioned, I forget who, I thought it was a very astute comment, was that the Valencia track is great for 125 racing, but not for anything much bigger.
Well, it's a little bit like Jerez in that factor, but what you've got with Valencia is the show.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So anyway, so you know, we got Rossi saying this stuff. I think it's great that he's saying it after becoming a champion, because a lot of people would just be quiet and be like, yeah, you know, well, I won with all the rules and blah, 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 blah. And I mentioned this before. I think if we had a racing series that Rossi, the perfect Valentino Rossi racing series, everybody would be in exactly the same equipment.
A true spec series, yeah.
Not world superbikes, but world...
Yeah,
you know,
the boxer cup.
Yeah,
but we heard Liam saying that even with the tire rule, that it's never going to be the same, because there's things you can do to make those things different. All sorts of stuff that they can do, the trickery, and I mean, a level playing field is only very so level. Well, not to bring up NASCAR, but let's talk about NASCAR. You know, they try to make it as level as possible and all of that, and they've got this Stone Age freaking engine and so on and so forth. It's still the same guys that win, you know?
Right.
It might be more guys, I don't know, 10 or whatever the hell it is, that, you know, that they do their race for the chase and all that business. But it's you know, it's basically, it's the teams with the money, because they can do things within the rules, totally within the rules, that make things different. The only way you'd have a truly fair, or if you want to call it fair, a truly, you know, a spec race like that, is if you had 18 motorcycles that were prepped by, you know, by the factory, and they were randomly assigned, right, to the exactly. riders on the grid. Yeah. And, you know, that, you know, who's that's, that would be crazy, because different riders have different styles.
And I think also that like even Rossi would admit that a lot of his success is because he's so good at translating what's happening on the track to his mechanics. So there's that aspect of racing too.
Right. Right. You know, and it's a setup. It's 'cause it's a team effort.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, all right.
So, yeah. So, other news that I wanted to mention was that last week we were talking about, you know, Hiro Aoyama not even having a ride for next year because KTM withdrew. He did actually end up scoring he's on the Red Bull K for Honda with Stefan Bradl. So that's a pretty good move, although, you know, Honda's not been the strongest in the 250s. So, but at least, you know, we'll see him again next year. So it's great.
Right, which is good. Glad he got a ride.
Yep. And then the other thing I wanted to just... Oh, no, that's it. That's it. That's all the news that I want to talk about. So we've got this World Superbikes race coming up this weekend, which should be fun.
Exactly. The end of MotoGP. We're done now. We've sort of drifted off.
Yeah.
But yes, World Super Dupers at their final race in Portimão. New track for them in Portugal. Which
this track is so new that like we were looking for it on Google Maps and right on too. And like the best you can find is like a dirty, dusty layout as they were, I guess, clearing the space for the track earlier this year.
Which is super interesting. I mean, it's
amazing how fast this thing came up.
Yeah, exactly.
They're still working on it, apparently, actually. They're still putting finishing touches on it.
Better hurry up because you know, they got a couple of days. So.
Yeah, well, they're starting testing in about 36 hours, I think.
Yeah, yeah, practice, so, not just testing, practice.
I mean, practice, that's right.
Yeah. And World Super Championship is locked up. You know, Bayless is the champion. We're done. But the race for second is interesting because you've got Haga and Courser on the same team, same bike, same everything, 9 points apart.
Yeah, yeah. It's super fun to see that one.
Yeah, Haga's slightly ahead. Haga has won several races this year. But in classic Haga win it or bin it style, he has not been nearly as consistent as Courser, who has not won any races.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah,
it is. Courser, it is amazing.
And Courser's always been a fairly consistent guy. Like,
oh yeah,
even when he sucks consistently. But Haga seems to wake up like in the second half of the season. He just really blew this season in the beginning. You know, with that stupid thing with Biaggi when he crashed. You know, flipping off Biaggi. Just a couple of really just dumb mistakes in the beginning, and then after that, he was just fantastic.
Right, right.
You know, and it's the same thing as last year. Last year, he almost took the championship away from Tolson in the very end because he was so amazing at the end.
Right. Well, he is. I mean, they don't call him Nitro Nori for nothing. I mean,
no, they don't.
Yeah. I mean, win it or bin it is a bit. It might be a little bit unfair, but it's. I don't know. It's not too far off the mark for Haga.
No, and that's one of the reasons why we love him. You know.
Yes, exactly.
He's bashing fairings out there, swapping paint, all that cliche motorcycle racing talk.
Right, right. So two more races for because of the doubleheader thing they got going in World Super Dupers. 50 points on the table, same point structure as MotoGP, where you have 25 for the winner, 20 for second place, 16 for third place, et cetera, et cetera. 9 points is not very much in two races.
No.
Especially two races on the same track. Because if Courser can go out there and just master this track and Haga does not, then those 9 points are easy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a new track, so we have no idea. None of these guys have any idea what they're in for. They haven't even seen the surface yet.
Exactly.
I think it's going to be very fun to see this.
All that notwithstanding, as we speak, you know, these riders have not gone out on the track and all that. All that notwithstanding, who is your pick for second place, Haga or Courser?
I'm going to be rooting for Haga.
Who's your pick, though?
My pick. I'm going to say it's going to be Haga because he seems to. I'm trying to remember the last time I saw him at a brand new track.
Vallelonga?
So Nürburgring was kind of new this year.
And right? Vallelonga last year.
And Nürburgring, he just kicked butt in this year. Nobody could figure out the first corner except him, and he did really well there.
Yeah.
Vallelonga last year, I forget how he did there.
And Misano backwards and all of that.
Right, right.
I agree.
That was a part of the season where he was doing really well last year. So, yeah, I think he's more adaptable than Courser.
Okay. And I that's a good scientific way to put it. I was just going to go with the gut feeling that I think that Haga – I agree. Haga will pick up that second spot.
Yeah. I mean, he's going in with an advantage, which means that and Courser's got nothing to lose because he's not going to get caught from behind.
Right.
So he's going to be, you know. Well, actually, can he get caught from behind?
He can mathematically. He can, but
yeah, mathematically, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think was a 14, 18 point gap back to fourth position. I had the press release open here. Let me take a look.
Note.
blah, blah, blah. Courser is 18 points ahead of Max Neukirchner, and then 14 back farther back is Carlos Checa.
Right.
And so, Max Neukirchner, very, very, very talented guy, but he's not picking up 18 points on Troy Courser in one weekend.
Yeah, and this track doesn't seem to me like a track where he's going to be able to take advantage of the Suzuki's top speed. It's got that one straight, which may,
pretty good straight.
But the rest of the track is is, well, no, I don't know. I take it back because elevation changes are actually also good for the Suzuki because yeah. it's very powerful.
And there's actually a couple of corners that look pretty high speed and stuff too. Yeah. So yeah. it'll be interesting to see. It's a somewhat fun layout. I think it's reminiscent of the broad layout. I thought was reminiscent of like Catalunya and Estoril, where you've got sort of almost like a straight flanked by two arms.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
sort of have.
I'm looking at the photo right now. I can totally see why, especially Catalunya.
Yeah, especially Catalunya.
But it's got a lot more elevation changes than Catalunya does.
Right.
So
that's going to make a difference.
That's a huge difference. I mean, you look at the layout for a track like Miller. If you look at it from above, it just doesn't look that interesting. But man, all those elevation changes really make that an interesting track.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, it is. And that's going to be a factor here as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So that'll be good stuff. We got that going on this weekend, which Speed is showing at their normal sort of time of, I don't know, noonish on Sunday Pacific time, so 3-ish Sunday Eastern time. If you are in the United States, of course, if you are international or you're watching it live or what have you, then your mileage may vary. Make sure you check your local listings because Europe went to their what do you call it? Standard time already.
Yeah. Came last week. Right. So.
Whereas we, because of the barbecue industry, now extend our daylight savings time quite a long ways out.
Hello.
So it's pitch dark in the mornings when I leave for work nowadays. But other than that, it's going to be some interesting stuff, and that'll be a fun way to finish the season. And then it's like 5 long months. Until we have motorcycle racing. When does World Super start their season next year? Are they starting really, really early again? Have you seen that?
I don't think that I've seen their...
I haven't seen their schedule. I haven't seen the World Super schedule. Because, I mean, they start sometimes crazy early, like February.
Right.
Yeah. And then they take like a 2-month break.
That's right. Almost right away. They basically start really early so that they can get
the jump on MotoGP is what it is.
Yep.
Yeah. And then take a little break, and then MotoGP starts, and then World Supers comes back. Yeah. But it's all good stuff. There's a lot of personalities in both series that we love and adore and want to watch, doing their thing. And, I mean, anybody who's got a nickname like Nitro Nori, you know that guy's going to be the guy you want to watch.
So they're starting March 1st at Phillip Island.
March 1st. Yeah. At Phillip Island, March 1st.
Why? That's perfect.
Is it? I mean, that's fall in Australia.
That's true, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. I would think it's a bit iffy. So if you, 6 months difference, that's going to be, I guess it should be okay because that would be like September 1st in the Northern Hemisphere. So
right. Weather
should be okay. And I mean,
you what was, know it's
they were Island, okay because Phillip Island was their first race last year and I think it was all right. So. As all right as weather ever is at Phillip Island, where you have, all four seasons in one day.
Right.
So, right. Yeah.
I don't think it matters what season you're in.
And the seagull pictures. By the way, was it last show or the show before where we said about the Boston Globe and check out these pictures?
Yeah, a couple of shows ago, yeah.
Yeah. That one of the seagull was freaking awesome.
Amazing. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I know. I looked at those pictures and I was like, I couldn't believe it that this is some newspaper back east that really doesn't have much to say about motorcycle racing and all that. And they picked just some fantastic photos. I mean, it was well worth looking at.
Yep. Yeah, it's incredible. All right. One final shout out to that fucking tool. Who was trying to sell Craig Jones's helmet on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's ugly. Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoever you are out there, you're a fucking tool.
Yeah. That was bad stuff. And the whole thing got a big mess with MCN getting involved and all of that. And apparently somebody was trying to actually try to buy it to give it to Craig Jones's family. And then the eBay auction kept getting put over, like, I don't know what, something crazy, like 10 million pounds or something.
Right, right.
Yeah, finally eBay shut it down because of intellectual property rules. So,
do we know if it got recovered? The helmet, I believe, got recovered, didn't it?
Did it? After the whole auction?
I don't know, actually. That's right, because that was the whole reason why the guy wanted to buy it, was because he was afraid that if it gets, like, too publicized or whatever, that it's going to get... the guy's just going to bail.
Yeah. I had not heard anything after that. So if it got recovered, that's news to me.
No, maybe not.
Yeah. The whole thing is like you say, it's pretty fucked up that somebody would sell that, you know. It's like, come on, dude. So whatever. All right. Well, there's a season wrap up for you, folks.
we'll talk more. I don't know if you're gonna, are you going to do a show next week?
I was kind of thinking of taking the week off because of the track days and all that. I'm going to be gone Monday and Tuesday. I'm going down to Thunder Hill in California for a 2-day track day, and that'll pretty much gut my week as far as
maybe,
stuff.
Maybe we should both skip it and then come back with when we actually have something interesting to say.
Right, right, and we can wrap up World Supers. Their series right. as well
right.
and all of that and just sort of, you know, just kind of wander on with it. So let's figure that we will skip that first show in November, which is the November 7th Friday, and we'll be back November 14th.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Jules.
I like we're planning during the call. That's great.
You like that? Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
Very good.
It's always fun talking to you and everything, and I appreciate it a lot. So we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Ciao.
Bye. And that's going to do it for this week's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier in the show or not, but Peter did a write-up on Ride On 2 in the forums about his Malaysian holiday. And you got to read it because basically Peter is, I'd say he's a somewhat of a flying by the seat of his pants kind of guy. And this is a little bit about, sort of Peter's wild ride in Malaysia kind of a story. It's funny. There's all kinds of good stuff. You can find that on rideon2.com in the forum, in the everything else. And, of course, there's a link on motogpod.com. So if you go to motogpod.com, you should see a link to that. Or just go directly to rideon2. That's the word ride, O-N-N-T-W-O. So rideon2.com. And check out the forum. It's in the everything else section. Malaysian Adventure, I believe, is the title of the thread. Check it out. Good stuff. Thanks again to Peter. Thanks again to everybody involved in the show. Do appreciate it a lot. And let's see, like I said, we're going to be skipping next week, so we're taking a quick break. Don't forget World Super Dupers this weekend. If you're listening to the show before Sunday, you're going to get to see the final round of the World Superbikes, and that'll be good stuff as we at least decide who's second in their championship. And Jules and I will be back middle of November, November 14th, do a wrap-up about the World Superbikes, to talk some other stuff and all of that kind of thing. Maybe talk about the track day down there at Thunder Hill in Willows, California, beginning of November, with the Pacific Super Sports Riders that we're going to go do down there. So it'll all be good stuff, and we will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Oh, geez, got the tape in there backwards here. One more time. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.